Are you ready? I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning for a regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment number one. This comment period for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing any movement. Consider we don't have any minutes from this from last week, so we'll deal with those next week. Consideration of personnel actions. Move approval.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Consent agenda. Looks like we probably need to pull item number...
Number one. Yep.
Number one.
And I'd move approval. You still got...
Don't get ahead of yourself.
I'm ready.
We've got utility permits 1523 through 1528.
1523 through 28.
That's it.
Okay. Ready now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now I'll move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda minus item one with noted changes. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Next, consideration of resolution 1533 for the Board of Supervisors of Story County.
Won't we do? That's where we are now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm struggling today, Tudor.
Yeah.
Keep me straight.
You want to do this?
No, you got it.
Okay. All right. Hereby gives us consent that the City of Ames may exercise urban renewal powers pursuant to Chapter 4-3 of the Code of Iowa with respect to the property. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. The City of Ames recently annexed 200 acres of property on the south side of ISU Research Park. We annexed to the center line of 530th, which for the city is University Boulevard. We are proposing an urban renewal area that will include at some point improvements to University, and therefore we need to include the entire right-of-way in the urban renewal area. We're asking the county to approve the inclusion of unincorporated land in the city's urban renewal area pursuant to Iowa code. I give you a lot more background on that if you want, but essentially we're asking for your acquiescence, including a piece of unincorporated land in the city's urban renewal area.
And I've had a conversation with the engineer about this, and, mm-hmm. and he says it's fine with him.
They've got agreements with how the road's going to be maintained.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, it makes a lot of sense. It's a great project that that we're bringing. I think Ames is doing exactly the appropriate thing in how they're going to handle what is now going to be University moving right. further south. And so I would move approval of Resolution 1533.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve Resolution 1533. Is there any further discussion? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. Thanks for coming over, Charlie.
Now, do you need something signed and to take with you or not? We don't have it.
Well, there you go.
You don't have anything that we asked to...
Nope.
Okay.
Well, we have no public hearing items. Additional items. Considerations for canceling the Board of Supervisors meeting on November 11th, 2014, and December 23rd, 2014, due to the holiday.
And the 11th is having to do with ISAC, right?
Well,
no, the 11th is Veterans Day. Office closed. It's a holiday.
Anyway, the court.
And the Christmas holiday is that traditionally when it falls during that time we either adjust because, you know, either the following week or the week after we'll end up having our organizational meeting. So we'll end up having some couple meetings in that 1 week. So
right.
it's more than appropriate, I think, to be able to conclude the end of the end of this current year, calendar year, and then all the business that will take place. So I would move that we approve the changing of our schedule or to not holding meetings on those two dates as listed.
I'll second.
Motion and a second to not have meetings on November 11th and December 23rd.
Right.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Discussion and consideration of funding requests for facilitation services for the Demand Response Service Task Force. Deb Shildroth.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a mouthful.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What I just handed out to you is an updated task force charter for the transportation task force that we are pulling together. And I'll go back just a little bit of a historical perspective on this. There are several agencies in the community that are having some concerns about public transportation for their clients to get to appointments, today programs, those kinds of things. And after many discussions and many kinds of groups and settings, it was determined that maybe we should pull together a task force of these agencies to look at solutions on how to best address these transportation issues. And so the City of Ames and the county are partnering on this. We've had some involvement with United Way and then SciRide as well. And so this charter's been developed, and the members of the task force are listed there. We want a representative from each of these agencies. And just for the record, the agencies are Mainstream Living, Lutheran Services of Iowa, Heartland Senior Services, McFarland Clinic, Mary Greeley Medical Center, the Ark of Story County, Foster Grandparents, Riverside Manor, and the Rose. And then the transportation providers that will be involved include HRDA, SciRide, and Retired Senior Volunteer Program. The RSVP offers a volunteer service for individuals, and they have seen a substantial increase in demand in their service, so we thought it was important to include them in this discussion as well. A facilitator has been contacted. Her name is Nancy France, and she is organizing the meetings, and they're planning on having a total of four meetings. The first one would just involve the task force members. The second meeting would involve just the transportation providers, so those three transportation providers. The third meeting would involve both task force and transportation provider members. And then that last meeting will involve everyone and will kind of wrap up what's been discussed in all of the meetings so that there is a report and a set of recommendations available by the end of the calendar year. And we're anticipating starting these meetings sometime in mid-November. A date has not been set yet because we're still working on contacting potential members for the task force. The request that's before you is a funding request for the facilitation process that Nancy France is providing. And there's a maximum of $2,500. The county is being requested to pay at least half of that. And then the city council will be taking this up on their agenda at their meeting this evening. Are there any questions or comments at this point?
I think it's a good step. I'm appreciative to you and Melissa for starting to pull this together. Wayne, I know you're actively involved in transportation in Story County. I think we can all agree that there are some fairly strong concerns. Some of them I think very, very legitimate. Some of them I think are just misses in what some of our transportation system is supposed to be. I think this is the right first step toward getting to the bottom of what should our transportation system look like in Story County and Ames, and ultimately what will that cost us, and make sure we're fulfilling or continuing to fulfill everything that we're required to fulfill by law.
Yeah, and I appreciate the efforts that has been put forth in addressing this, this is since I serve on the HRDA board, and I recognize and right in the midst of some of the challenges that we're having, I certainly agree that this format will help us maybe kind of understand all sides of the issues, look at other options that are out there, what additional funding may or may not need to be in place to meet the needs, or are there other things that we need to consider to help accommodate the service, because obviously these agents do have clients that depend heavily on some other mode of transportation other than their individual family members being able to get them to and from the various service providers. So I think any assistance that the we could have, and I think the great part about this is again a unified collaboration that have been the hallmark of Story County, while we are having the county, the City of Ames, United Way, and particularly other interested groups all come to the table to address this problem. So I really want to thank you, Deb, and Melissa and Rick. I really appreciate you stepping in to provide the leadership, because not that it would be a conflict of interest, but me being a board member on the HURTA board, and I think having someone else represent us through this process would be most appropriate. I will attend the meeting that HURTA actually is invited to be at, but I think having someone else guide us through that, I think, is the most appropriate way for us to deal with that. So I thank you.
And I see from the letter that accompanies this that it's the funding is from unallocated asset dollars.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
There are general funds that were not allocated in the process last January, so we've just set those aside, and there are dollars to cover this if it is approved. And the other thing I just wanted to mention briefly, too, as you read through the task force charter, each meeting is very solution-focused. So brainstorming solutions, focusing on what can be done in a better way, what are the other options. I think it's important for everybody who's coming together on this to understand what the parameters are around public transportation, what can be done, what cannot be done, and is public transportation for everyone, or are there some other options out there that will better meet the needs of individuals? So mm-hmm. I really like the sense that this facilitator is going to bring to the table. She's a neutral party and really wants to keep everybody on task and focused on solutions.
Well, and I've heard great things about her.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I would move, first of all, support of the charter as written, and secondarily, that we approve up to $1,250 of funding to pay for the facilitation and make sure that this study happens.
Okay, I will second the motion.
We got a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. It's been approved.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks Deb.
That takes us down to agency reports. Veteran Affairs, Brett McClain.
Thank you.
Morning, Brett.
Brett, thanks.
Nice job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good morning.
Morning.
This morning I'm going to cover our first quarterly report, covering July, August, and September, and also let everybody know who the commissioners are and positions they hold. Terry Greenfield is now our commission chair. Terry is on his first tour as a commissioner. Harlan Borton is our commission member. He's kind of our senior commissioner with about 28 years. Lee Bauer is our new commissioner, and he is our secretary. Mr. Bauer retired from the U.S. Air Force and his effective date was July 1 of 2014 on his first term. Mr. Bauer comes with over 31 years of U.S. Air Force, fighter, airlift operations, intelligence, and joint staff leadership experience. Mr. Bauer has extensive experience in financial management, business development experience during 14 years in industry, nine of those with IBM delivering DOD and U.S. government technology solutions. Mr. Bauer was an advisor to four ambassadors and accredited in 10 counties. He has a master's degree in national resource strategy, master's in management, and a bachelor's in economics. And we're very fortunate to have Mr. Bauer in Story County as a commissioner, and we want to thank the board for appointing him. County benefits, in the last 3 months, we've seen three veterans for rent, two at $500 apiece and one for $490. Under state and federal benefits, during the last quarter, we assisted 293 veterans and surviving spouses. 54 of those were original claims were developed and sent to the VA regional office. Six claims were reopened for increases due to diagnosis being much worse now than they were when they were first granted service connection. 26 of those veterans were from World War II. It's kind of amazing that we're still working with World War II veterans, but some of these World War II veterans we're seeing for the first time. They've never received any benefits yet. 29 from Korea, 105 veterans from Vietnam War, 27 Persian Gulf, and 21 from the Cold War, and then 47 OIF, OEF, and OND. And 39 of those we were able to enroll in VA health care. Kind of leads me to our annual. We get a GDX report from the federal government, and these are geographical distributions of VA expenditures. It's their expenditures. It's money coming to this county. And so I laid out the last few years, and they're a year behind. So FY13, $19.419 million were coming to veterans of Story County and surviving spouses for medical care, compensation for injuries, pension, or they might have been in the Voc Rehab program where they were getting their college paid for. FY12, it was a little over $15 million. FY11, $16 million. And in 10, 13, 9, 12. And I went back to 1999 when I started, it was 3.9. So for over 14 years, we got an average of an increase of $1.104 million per year. So we feel like we're really on track there. That if you look at FY12 and you see it was 16, then the next year it went down. What had happened in 11? What had happened in 11 is that's a lot of retro payments to Vietnam veterans because of Agent Orange. So it really increased our numbers for that 1 year. Also, this last quarter, kind of had a goal. This is kind of a goal of mine. It was on my for my evaluations and things, to get a Vietnam Veterans of America chapter started in Story County. There was a lot of Vietnam veterans that wanted to get one started, and so we were able to do that July the 3rd. We got a VBA chapter here in Story County. John Koss is the first president, and he holds his meetings at the Lions Club in Ames. Normally it's the second Thursday of the month at 6:30. So I encourage any and all Vietnam veterans to attend those meetings and see what those guys really have a lot of ideas that they want to do for the community. However, they don't have any funds yet, so they're kind of thinking about some fundraising ideas so that they can roll that money over to help out the community. Last week, Luke Jensen and myself, we attended the Iowa Fall VA School in Des Moines. That was 3 days. And Terry Greenfield and Lee Bauer, they attended the one-day training session for commissioners in Des Moines. Training was filled with a lot of valuable tools that we can use right here in Story County. So really appreciate the support from the board so we can attend these kind of training sessions. military tax exemption. Last year, it was the intention of our legislators to include 100% service-connected, and then those that was 100% service-connected for individual unemployment. And what that means is if they're, let's just say they're 70, because they're not able to work, they'll move them to 100, and the federal government will pay, the VA will pay them 100%. And then also DIC, these are widows that lost their veteran due to a service-connected disability. Well, when it got, when the bill got to the Department of Revenue, they didn't read it the same way that legislation intended it. So we're hoping this year. So in the last year, what happened was 100% service connected was included in DIC, but folks that were on IU, which means they really couldn't go and earn any more money, they weren't included for some reason. So we're hoping this year they will be. The deadline is July the 1st for those folks to apply. And if you live in Ames, of course, you go to the Ames City Assessor. And if you live in the county outside of Ames, you go to our county county assessor. So I'm just trying to – currently we have – last year what had happened, I had 2 weeks from when the forms were developed between then and the deadline, July 1, to get as many as we could enrolled. I believe we have 9. So I know there's more out there, but currently we have 9 that are enrolled. And what this means is they don't their property tax will go to zero, next year. So during the fiscal year, we did actually due to Paul's recommendation to host another county supportive initiative. And we did that this year as an outside venue at Brookside Park. We had services such as we had meals, clothing, haircuts, employment services. The vet center was there for mental health and PTSD issues. We had dental, provided health care, VA claims, benefits, and hygiene kits. So we didn't. This wasn't for veterans. It was for anybody that was homeless or close to being becoming homeless.
How many people did we serve there, Brett?
We had 22.
Yep.
And probably out of that, we had 9 were veterans. So, I mean, we've seen kids, and, I mean, it's just hard to believe some of the folks that came out for that they're really close to being homeless or they were homeless living in a vehicle. Also, October the 5th, we had our third send-off program. Mm-hmm. And I think, Rick, I seen you handing out flags that day. And there was a lot of people there. Wayne, you were there. Paul, you were probably there. A lot of people there that day for our third one. We had a 102-year-old that we took this year on our flight, which was October the 7th. So currently to date, Renee and I have been providing the leadership for volunteers to do these flights, and we've taken 447 veterans to D.C. in the last 36 months. Next year, we're planning our final flight. We're going to start enrollment November the 14th at the day that we have our supermarket in Ames, and we're going to run that out till the middle of February. So we urge all veterans, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Vietnam-era veterans to sign up, and we'll kick fundraising into gear the first of the year and get our last group out there. We always kind of thought four flights would probably do it, and currently right now we have about 60 signed up. So,
Brett, have we reached almost all of our World War II vets? I mean, I know that was the impetus, in it, and it's grown beyond that, but have we reached almost all of them at this point?
Well, far as we know, we have one that went to the hospital after the send-off. We had 6 at the send-off on Sunday, but on Tuesday we only had 5 of them on the plane. We had one that went to the hospital, so providing that things go good for him, we could probably get him on the next one. But, you know, we keep trending down. The first flight we had 30-some, then we had 20-some, and this last time we actually took 5, which the oldest being 102. But, you know, he was You know, and we told these guys, as soon as we roll into the Des Moines airport, as soon as you step off, there's media everywhere. If you don't want to talk to them, just tell them so. But the 102-year-old got most of the attention, of course, in Des Moines. And, you know, during the day, you know, we had people in D.C. coming up, hey, where's your 102-year-old at? I don't know, but there's 40 wheelchairs. He's in one of them, you know.
Well, Brett, you and Renee, Treasurer Tweet, deserve a lot of accolades for what you've done here. This has been an outstanding thing for our veterans in Story County, and I know that you and Renee have put in hours and hours of work to get this done, and so we're greatly appreciative.
Well, we sure appreciate that. It's really been, it's really neat to be able to accompany these veterans, and just so everybody knows, we pretty much do everything on the plane except for fly the plane. I mean, we take over serving, the airline stewardess take a break, and we do all that. So we're not in our seat very, very long. And, you know, we're up taking care of these veterans. We got some that are in first class that we're really watching over. We have a doctor there. And we've just been really fortunate. The group, the people that we've taken out there, we've not had any issues. We always have an issue every time, but this time it was with the plane. We had issues with the aircraft, and such as a seat broke when they landed from St. Paul that morning. So we were down. We had 162 people and 161 seats. That was our first little thing to figure out. So. But we got out there. We got out to D.C. a little bit late just because of aircraft issues. But we did see everything and kind of caught up with our schedule and everything. So, but really appreciate the community's support. We couldn't do it without the community's support on this. And after the flight, October the 10th, we had the DAV mobile van, which goes around in four different states. And we had them at our parking lot there at the office. And we're taking care of some. We had about 20-some veterans that showed up that day. Upcoming events. We have the newsletter. We're finishing it up actually today. That's going to get mailed just as soon as we get her done. We've partnered with Boone County and Iowa State University to include, all of those veterans. And we just kind of divided up the newsletter. We each get a couple of pages to get some important information out to those veterans. November the 5th. Luke and I are going to do a PTSD program at St. Cecilia's Church in the afternoon at 2. We're going to talk a little bit about, what can a person do to help somebody that you know that might be having some issues with PTSD. What could a person do that recognizes that they might have it? And then we're going to do a testimonial. A few months back, at the same church, we had a doctor from the VA that treats veterans with PTSD. So this is just kind of a piggyback from that program. And November the 14th, as always, we're going to do our annual supermarket. That's always the Friday after Veterans Day, and Veterans Day is November the 11th. We're going to do the supermarket on the 14th at the Moose Lodge from 9 until 5. And this year we've added in a flu clinic from 11 until 3 so they can get their flu shots. As long as you're a veteran, you can get your flu shot. If you're not they can only give shots to veterans. So they used to do it for surviving spouses and spouses, but just the veterans. And then we're also going to do a blood pressure check station from that same time. So something new we've just kind of added to it. All right, that's all I have. Does have anything good for me?
Brett, talk to me about Home Base Iowa before you get away. Where we are with that in Story County?
One of the things for Home Base Iowa is retired military estate pay tax will stop. It's not a simple process. It's not like Iowa can communicate with DFAS, which is where retired pay is, and say, hey, pull up all your Iowa retirees. And it doesn't work that way. Each retiree has two forms they have to fill out and send, and they'll stop taking out state taxes. So that's one thing that's on that bill. And if a retiree doesn't do it, they're just going to get their money back at the end of the year, you know, that kind of thing. Also, was the military tax exemption for the property was on there. There's about six different other things that are on there, too, as well as training. Say for an example, a person was on active duty as a corpsman in the Navy for 20 years. And they did sick call and, you know, they did medical and that kind of thing. Well, when they got out, they couldn't go work at a clinic, even with that much experience. So another thing in that home base Iowa is giving them the credits so that they could continue to do that. I mean, it's unreal how many, you know, how many people that they would have seen doing sick call in that many years, not to be able to take somebody's blood pressure out here or do anything. So, you know, real happy with the governor signing that, and they say legislation did more for veterans than they had last year than they have like in 47 years. So,
I've got a meeting that popped on my calendar for this Friday. Are you planning on being there for that one? It's a home base Iowa meeting at the AIMS Chamber.
Yep, okay. I'm going to be there. Yep, sure. I'm planning on being there for that one.
Yep. Brett, just not that this was veterans, but, you know, once in a while when you're driving around, you run across some things that make you stop and think. Yesterday as I was leaving the community service building, I noticed two gentlemen in a car going through garbage cans. And so I stopped and waited just a little bit because to see what they were really looking for, and it actually they were trying to get pop cans and pop bottles. My first thought was if they were trying to get some other documents or papers, you know, I'd try to call the police and have someone notice. But then they were very careful to put it back, make sure that there was nothing left on the ground. They were just tearing open some bags, and it just made me think again about homelessness that we do have, and maybe they were just looking for different ways of coming up with some income. I don't know. But one side of me thought, well, do I approach them, or do I just, you know, do nothing? And I don't know if, you know, that is becoming something that's more common in our community. But it just struck me a little odd to see that here. And so I don't know if I see that again, I'm not sure what my response should be. I hate to go up and confront someone, you know, in that situation. But then I thought afterwards, I said, well, what if I should have taken my little camera and taken a snapshot just in case? But have you run into or heard of or any situations where we're seeing people who are, you know, going through trash and so forth, just looking for pop cans and stuff like that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. They're called dumpster divers.
Okay.
And, yeah, down if you go down to by the DOT, there's some tents down there. Okay. There's some veterans and non-veterans living down there. And they have bicycles. And well, you said this one, they were in a vehicle that time. And you know, a nickel at a time, it just adds up. And so there's just, you know, there's a resource there and something they're able to do if they're not working anywhere. It probably does help them to survive. If, you know, you'll see from time to time, you'll see that in the community.
Yeah, I would have probably
seen
it
like early in the. I've always seen it like early in the morning at times.
Yeah,
but
yeah, this was about 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And as I say, they weren't making a mess of it. They just was carrying the bag open, going through, looking, and they made sure and stuff. I saw a couple things fall on the ground. They pick it up and put it back in there. So I said, well, at least you know it's.
Yep. Yeah. They'll clean up after themselves, get the things out of there that's of some value that somebody's throwing away. And
okay. Well, interesting.
So, yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All righty.
Thanks, Brett.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Next is Youth and Shelter Services, Dr. George Belitzos.
George, how are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Off to a great start. And that is because I'm here before the Board of Supervisors.
I'm sure
it is.
Oh,
boy, you're so good.
For your support of children and youth. And, in fact, today it is one day or 1 week away from the elections. And we are celebrating Step Up for Kids Day today. Step Up for Kids Day has the message, I'm voting for candidates that support children and youth services. And I would, this is a nonpartisan campaign that's nationwide. I would like to hand out to everyone here, your vote matters. Vote November 4th, 2014. Lawmakers who you elect, local, state, and federal, make decisions that affect the lives of Iowa's children and youth. And then it has a list of things that both local, state, and national candidates should be talking about and should hopefully be supporting, as I know this board does. I'm very grateful for that, and so if you would be willing to consider wearing one of these, if you wouldn't mind helping me hand these out, everyone here. Step Up for Kids Day. Reminder 1 week before the election that we want you to step forward and make children and youth a part of what you talk about as candidates and what you vote for.
Fine suit.
You'll be good.
It'll hold for a day.
It'll hold for a day. It won't leave that residue on there. You know, I may have to put it on my tie.
We are also celebrating Red Ribbon Week. Started yesterday. Now, as you know, last month the Board of Supervisors stepped forward and declared it Recovery Month, and that calls attention to the benefits of recovering from drug addiction, being treated for mental health conditions, and underscoring the need to support those services and those people who are in recovery. Well, this week is Red Ribbon Week, and it is nationwide, and the purpose of the week is to underscore preventing drug addiction and substance abuse. So we're going to hand out now, Laura, if you don't mind, red ribbons to everyone here today and ask you to wear them proudly. We had a march yesterday in downtown Ames with a lot of our recovering youth and also supporters of those youth. And these are some of the signs we had that the kids held up. Love yourself, be drug free. And, in fact, that was our chant during the march. And we have another one here. The first wealth is health. That makes a great chant. Mm-hmm. This has a big bear on it. No is a complete sentence. It does not require justification or explanation. It's easy to prevent bad habits. It's easier to prevent bad habits than it is to break them. Great message there. So remember Red Ribbon Week, and in fact, I saw the Nevada Youth Service Bureau as I drove up to the courthouse or to the administration building today, and there was a big red ribbon wrapped around it, so take note of that.
Where is this, George?
Right here, the Nevada Youth Service Bureau, our Eastern Story County location.
Your facility, great.
Yep, it's all wrapped in a big red ribbon in honor of Red Ribbon Day.
Well, George, I noticed that it must be coming financially feasible. This one's a little skimpier than previous red ribbons. And thinner, lighter. So, I mean, in past, you know, you used to have a pretty bold red ribbon.
And big one. Yeah, and bold. And it's also our theme for, kids being healthy.
Yeah.
And being aware of their weight. So I think that's why we did to talk about overall health, not just preventing substance abuse. So that was intentional. Also, I wanted to let you know that we had a second march on Sunday. We're also promoting adoption. There are over 200 kids on the KidsNet website that need to be adopted. So we hosted a march in Ames on Sunday, and we had just over 300 march,
wow,
which was just a great turnout. It's a second year for doing this. And a lot of the kids that were there were up for adoption, so people got to meet them. A lot of them had recently been adopted and marched with their adoptive parents.
Mm.
So we are really trying to call attention to the needs of those kids who need a permanent home. Now I'm going to hand out our quarterly report, and Jason, you might do this, and then I will invite Jason to come up and talk about our first quarter, July, August, September, and the numbers served, the trends we're seeing, and it's two sides. First side is the treatment services, and the other side is our prevention services. We are off to a good start in the first quarter of the year. The agency is operating in the black, but we're facing some challenges. So Jason, our treatment services director, is going to give you a more detailed report on the counseling program, the chemical dependency program, and psychiatric services that we're providing, and in particular, give you an update on our new program in Story County called Integrated Health Homes or Integrated Health Services. And that started July 1, and we have been assigned Story, Boone, and Dallas County. So update from Jason.
Right, and that's Greene County, not Dallas County.
Green.
We go straight across Highway 30. It is really exciting, and I think some of you are aware of what we're doing with the Integrated Health Services. That's the new service that's part of Magellan Behavioral Health or individuals who have Medicaid. We're the pediatric provider for Story County. So every individual who's 0 to 18 who has Medicaid and some type of serious mental illness or behavioral issue, it's pretty wide open with youth, has access to a care team. That care team is composed of a nurse, a family support specialist, and a case manager. And utilizing that process, we can help support families and individuals with mental illness, children with mental illness, to make better connections with their primary care physician, pediatrician, school, and other providers that they're working with. So far to date, here in Story County, we've signed up 89 families to be part of that program. You know, this is still early on. We're only 3 months in. We started July 1 live. As with any new program, it's challenging. We will be bringing on all those individuals who are on the mental health waiver, which were formerly provided services through county case management. Those individuals will be coming over to our care teams before December 31st. So we're really looking to the next 45 kids who have those higher needs to be coming over, and then we'll be managing respite services and those services that were formerly managed by case management. So this is a big systems transition, and we're very aware of the challenges that poses for families. Of change is difficult for everyone. So we're trying to do our best to make sure that we're getting information out there to the community about how to access these services, how we can help families to navigate the system. It's very challenging. The bureaucracy and navigating the healthcare system is only becoming more difficult for the families. It's more difficult for us as an organization, and it really takes a team of people to help to advocate for what's in the best interest of a lot of these kids. So we're working very hard on that. Do you guys have any questions about integrated health homes or integrated health services? Mm-hmm. It's going very well, and so we're excited. It's a difficult challenge. In addition to that, you know, we're staying strong with our psychiatric services. We continue to see a huge need. We're about 2 to 4 weeks out on appointments right now. There's still a severe psychiatric shortage in Story County, especially for youth. We're very strong in therapy right now. Same challenges there as with the other ones. There are more needs then there are services available.
Talk to me just for a second on individual therapy in the counseling program. Looks to me like in the first quarter we're already to half of our total number of clients served, but we're only a quarter of the way into unit served.
Just
help me understand how those two relate.
Sure, that's no problem. First quarter is generally our lowest quarter. So what we see is the least frequency of appointments occurring over the summer. So when kids are out of school, there's a little less structure. We see less compliance from a lot of families seeking help. As school gets back into session and families generally get back more into routines, then we're going to see an increase in our numbers. So second and third quarter are always our strongest quarters because we see more folks coming in. We lose a lot over the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays. We see a big dip in service delivery, and then we'll see really strong again toward winter and spring. And then summer, we see vacations and lots of people out. So then we see the dip, which is the first quarter of what you're seeing, Rick. Okay. So those are some of those ups and downs that we normally see.
Jason, what Rick was pointing out is some of the numbers are higher for the first quarter than they ordinarily would have been. So
we have more staff right now as well. So, you know, I think that's the difficulty. As we see the 6 month when we come back next quarter, then we're really going to see, you know, how that's going to filter out. We do have more therapists today than we did starting this fiscal year. We're delivering more services today than we have at any time previous to today. So we're seeing increased numbers. You know, as I said, there's a high volume of need.
Sure. But it looks to me like the units of service are tracking, you know, we're 25% of the way through the year, and we're tracking at about 25%. It's the number of clients served that we're to about half already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure how to track that, whether that carried over. And then the second one, and I may be jumping just ahead of you, is
that's okay.
It looks to me like we're way, way up on the chemical dependency side of things, individual therapy and assessment. Again, if I'm using that we're 25% of the way through the year, and so I don't know if that's staffing, that you've got more staff that we're able to accommodate more, or if we're just seeing that much more.
Both. Okay. You're seeing both, Rick. And I think as the year goes through, we'll be able to differentiate those numbers out a little bit more clearly for you. And some of this is data. We have some of our participants that go back and forth. It really depends on a diagnosis code, whether or not they go into that counseling field or chemical dependency.
Yep.
Category. So as we move forward, you see a lot of fluctuation between the two. So year to year, it could be just depending on what their primary diagnosis is at the time they come in.
So it's reasonable for me to associate those two areas together,
you
right?
You can kind of just put them all together so you have one lump number. So, you know, 80% of kids have a co-occurring mental health issue. So they're coming to us with depression, anxiety, and they're also using on a regular basis. So, you know, we can kind of flip a coin to decide which one we're going to treat them for first. Mm-hmm. And depending on which diagnosis goes down first is which category they're in. So you can kind of lump all those numbers together and say this is the need and not get into too much detail.
Okay.
That's helpful to you, Rick.
It does help. Thank you.
And then finally, I just wanted to throw out there that Laura here and myself finished the Mental Health First Aid for Youth training. So we can now facilitate that training. We're one of 20 trainers in the state of Iowa that can do youth mental health first aid. So as we talked about, I was very interested to hear about the PTS training for veterans. Mental health first aid, and specifically the program designed by the National Council on Behavioral Health, youth mental health first aid, is a great opportunity to go through an 8-hour course and really understand the challenges of youth from addiction to trauma and all the way through. It's great for school personnel. It's great for all of you to attend. If you haven't been to a youth mental health first aid training yet, I would love to see you at one. It really puts into perspective how you can help a youth. And it actually walks through, Wayne, how to approach someone if you're not sure how to approach them, and it gives you the tools you need to do that. So it would be
big stick.
It would be a great opportunity for you to be able to go through that course and have us talk to you about that. President Obama has really endorsed the program as a result of some of the tragedies across the country, and the National Council is really promoting it, as is the state of Iowa. So we really hope that we can be leaders here in Story County, knowing that three people are trained here in Story County to be able to go out and promote and provide youth mental health first aid. I'm actually meeting with Deb tomorrow morning so we can see how we can do a little more of that, of getting youth mental health first aid out in the community.
Thank you, Jason. Any other questions?
It just brings up a thought, and this is something that maybe I can talk with Deb and the governing board a little bit. But, you know, one of the things that I do think that is missing in our normal meetings is to have a report once in a time from some of the partner agencies and for some of the services that they provide, and maybe thinking about either quarterly or 6 months, like one time a year, it would be probably nice to invite some agencies within our region to kind of come and share some of the things that they're doing. I think it would be really helpful for a lot of the supervisors from the various counties to just be a little bit more familiar with some of the services that are available within our region, and especially since as we look at ours here, we've got all but one. I think Green is the only one that's not a part of our mental health region. And I just throw that out for something where maybe you guys can talk about and see if we could include that on occasion, because I think it would be very helpful information to share, particularly because so much of the thought process that we talk about in mental health seem to be geared more towards the adults rather than the youth. And this is another evidence of successful programs and services that have a tremendous impact on our young people. So I'd like to see us explore the possibility of considering that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Next, we're going to have a report on our prevention programs. And here is Laura Bell to bring you up to date for the first quarter of the new year.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I'm probably not close enough or speaking up enough. Is that better?
Red.
It's green.
Green.
Yeah.
Okay. If you need me to speak up, I can certainly do that. At the end of the quarter one, we had for our mentoring programs, we served a total of 108 matches with 62 waiting to be matched.
Thanks.
And then this summer for the Kids Club program, they were able to serve 37 children in Roland Story and 40 in Ballard. And then this summer was the first time that Gilbert ran two programs. So they served a total of 86 children between the two sites, which was the largest number that they've served over a summer. Also, they do 40 assets, so 40 developmental asset surveys with all the students that attend the Kids Club programs. And from that, they learned that 82% of their participants maintained or increased a positive self-perception. 83% of participants maintained or increased positive relationships with adults. 96% felt that it was harmful for someone their age to use tobacco, alcohol, or drugs. And 85% of the participants expressed satisfaction with the Kids Club programs. And tonight, if you are available, there is a Lights On After School open house at the Gilbert sites.
And here is the invitation from the kids to the Board of Supervisors to come.
So that's a great program. It's a great opportunity to get out and see what the after-school programs are, and it really kind of brings attention to the importance of having these programs available to youth and families. Within the prevention program, with the Teen Club, we have a new facilitator in the Ballard program. Her name is Liz Meisenberg. So she is working on growing the program and getting students involved, and they're working on starting their Lego League for the year. So they do Lego League competitions. And then Margaret Horowitz is starting her second year as our facilitator. And so far she has 14 youth registered for the Collins Maxwell Champs, not Sir Hamps, but Collins Maxwell Teen Club. And then within prevention, we have school-based programs that we are working on. The Too Good for Drugs program has seen so far in this first quarter 130 students. And then the Project Alert program, which is a science-based curriculum for middle school students, so far they have seen 84 students in Story County. Talking About Touching, which is a safety program, which is a school-based curriculum, they are working this quarter to get into schools and classrooms, so we'll have those numbers for you in second quarter. And then with tobacco programming, what I do in the county is we have another staff who is also now working on tobacco programming, and they're working specifically with youth presentations. But we're changing our focus a little bit from what it has been in the past, and we're working towards tobacco-free and nicotine-free wellness policies for businesses. So businesses, organizations that are working towards those policies, we'd be glad to provide them with education and assistance if they're interested in taking those steps. Also, we are promoting Quitline, Iowa. So George passed out the flyer for the, I think it's October promotions for Quitline, Iowa, provided by IDPH to us. So Quitline, Iowa is a toll-free phone cessation quit service that also has coaching available through their website. And it's available to 13-year-olds and older in Iowa. So that's a huge benefit because typically when you think of tobacco cessation, you don't always think about youth. So there's an excellent service that's available to youth now, free of charge. And for those who are 18 and older, they can call, work with Quitline, and receive a free 8-week supply of either the nicotine patch, gum, or lozenge. So that's a huge benefit for a free 8-week supply for those who are looking to stop. Within ESC, you saw that, well, George talked about how he saw our building is painted in red for Red Ribbon Week. So we are working on creating more awareness of our presence in the county and working on getting people aware of the services that we can offer. So we're going to be working on being more present in the community. So we'll be at downtown Trick or Treat this week. And then on Saturday, if you have any unused or expired medications, you can feel free to bring those to NoCara on Main Street here in Nevada from 10 to noon, and we will have them disposed properly and safely for you. So our drug drop-off event for the fall. But we are working on going to be more present at, like, farmers markets and community events also throughout the summer and throughout the year to create awareness. So we are also looking for board members in case any of you happen to want to join a board. or if you happen to know people in the county that would be passionate about serving youth and families, we would love to talk with them and see if they'd be interested in joining our board.
Any questions for Laura?
No.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you, Laura. Just to wrap things up, I again want to thank the Board of Supervisors and Deb Shildreth for the approval of the $30,000 for the repair and maintenance and also safety features at our Rosedale shelter. We've already started to take our priorities off the list and address those. You had asked what we are doing to meet the other financial needs to better secure our facility. And just wanted to share with you that we just received word that we will receive $6,000 from the Story County Community Foundation for the very same thing, adding to your 30. It brings it to $36,000. I think the fact that this was publicized because of your vote in favor and it got in the papers, I think it really helped, is helping us to collect support and to cultivate support from other funders and people in the community. So thank you again for that support. I did hand out to you a document on electronic cigarettes. It's a list of facts, and this was submitted to the Ames City Council with a request that they consider an ordinance in Ames to ban electronic cigarette devices in all public places. It ends with the last bullet, electronic cigarette nicotine ordinances. One city after another has started to ban the use of e-cigarettes in public places. In 2013, New York City and LA, which are the two largest cities in our country, both adopted electronic cigarette public places bans. As you know, we have also approached the Public Health Board here in Story County, and we're hoping at some time in the future, the Board of Supervisors will consider a similar ordinance or ban here for all of Story County. Next, I passed out to you one of our statewide programs. We also, of course, provide this service in Story County, and that is our new aftercare expansion. Now we are serving the kids aging out of Aldora, the state training school. We run this program at YSS statewide. We have 11 other nonprofits that we have subcontracts with. We're starting to get these really tough kids out of Aldora and realizing just how tough they are. from the day that kids exit when they turn 18. Some of them are actually older than that. They maintain them there until they feel that until they meet the court requirements, because all of those kids are court ordered to the state training school. Two of the kids are already deceased before they even got to us. One got out a week later, committed suicide. Another one was killed in a shooting. Neither of those, of course, were here in central Iowa, but those are things that we have to deal with as a statewide provider of the service. We're learning a lot about how high risk these kids are. But think of this. Before a legislature provided the expansion of the aftercare program for kids aging out of Eldora, and they also extended it to Toledo, but of course there is no Toledo anymore, there was nothing for them when they left. So now we will follow up with them for up to age 21, providing housing so they don't have to become homeless, providing mental health counseling, linking them up with finishing up school, including funds through ETV for trade school training. These kids coming out of Eldora State Training School, it is the end of the line for the boys. They really have a lot of challenges as they reenter their communities. They're already labeled as delinquent, bad kids. Mm-hmm. And I think we're, in a couple of years, I hope to be able to come back and tell you that the recidivism rate has really dropped. This is a direct line, Eldora, to the community and then to this adult prison system. We want to break that. Mm-hmm. So I just want you to know that YSS is really stepping up to the plate in a very new service here, not only in Story County, but across the state.
George, before we move off of this, can you talk me through the preparation for adult living program and the stipend that goes along with that? What has to happen for them to be eligible, and how much is that?
They can earn up to $600 a month as a stipend from the state through DHS, and we manage all of that. As they come out of the state training school, they don't have a place to live. We're not allowed to arrange housing for them until they leave Eldora. So there's a period of time in there of weeks, often, that they become homeless or go back home where their parents maybe are using drugs or cooking meth, or maybe they're really good citizens, but they don't want anything to do with their kid. They connect very quickly with their old playmates and playgrounds. So we're really trying to work on the entry into the program so that there isn't that period of homelessness. Or, you know, we keep telling the kids you have to change your playmates in the playgrounds if you're going to make it. So $600 is available.
Yeah, what would it take for the creation of some kind of halfway house? I mean, we have it for our adults who are getting out. What would it take for something like that to be created?
We're talking with DHS about that very thing right now because there is this down period of weeks. It takes a while to find an apartment or a group living situation for these kids. We are talking to about DHS about something temporary until they get there. They can't go into shelters.
No, that's different than the Kurt Ford type situation we're talking about.
Those are
totally
adults.
A different structure.
They're out of the prison system.
Right.
These kids are out of Eldora.
Right.
So we are talking about that. But $600 a month up till the age of 21, they continue. Then we will at Eldora, they aren't covered by Medicaid for health care, so we're signing them up for Medicaid so that their health care, mental health, substance abuse treatment needs can be met. That takes also about a month to get them signed up for that. You know, the kids at the state training school do not get Medicaid coverage. It's all paid. Their mental health, behavioral health, and physical health is only covered by state money. Medicaid will not cover the cost of institutionalized children. So that's a big thing that we're trying to speed up also. But they can get up to $600 a month. They have to earn it. It's just not a free handout. They have to be signed up for school, trade school, or working, or both. And they have to maintain that. Otherwise, they lose the stipend.
And it just seems to me, and I may be completely naive on this, George, but it just seems to me that there's an opportunity here to partner with our local community colleges or technical colleges.
Absolutely.
Because it seems to me, okay, we've got a young person coming out of a tough situation, and if we miss that opportunity to get them away from their old playmates and their old playgrounds, if we don't give them some idea that there's hope at the end of this journey, we're losing them. And I would assume the second time we lose them, they're gone.
That's correct.
Well, whatever we can do to help.
Thank you.
It seems to me there's an opportunity here. There should be so many interested people in getting this done simply because it's the right thing. But also here in Iowa, we've got a shortage of really sharp, technically trained workforce that it seems like this population might be a natural population to start to fit into some of those niches.
Absolutely correct. They get a lot of vocational training at the state training school, but no follow-up. They have a woodworking shop like you wouldn't believe there. They build all these things. They have mechanics. They have painting. They have just about everything there for them, but there's just no follow-up, and it's really hard for those kids to get jobs right away because of their record, because they do background checks, and you know, they have all these offenses. You know, until this last year, with what happened in Toledo, the kids at Toledo and Eldora have been pretty much neglected. And when the state woke up to the fact that we weren't giving the best of care to these kids at the end of the line, by then, Toledo was closed, no alternative. So then the focus shifted to Eldora, and the legislature and the governor, I think, for the first time realized that we owe it to these kids and to ourselves to give them a fighting chance. And so I think great things have happened as a result of
the tragedy
at Toledo.
I think there's an opportunity here, George, and I'm so excited that YSS has the contract to really try to push these things forward.
Thank you.
I think it's important.
Thank you. It's a challenge. Thank you for stepping up for kids and saying all that. That's really great. Especially stepping up for kids who have been labeled and have a lot of challenges. We need to pay attention to those kids just as well as any of them. I just want to finish by with one more announcement and invitation, and also piggybacking on the questions about homelessness. We do provide homeless and runaway services throughout central Iowa. And in fact, our program serves more runaway and homeless youth than any program in the state. And we have our once a year Reggie Sleepout coming up. We will have 1,000 plus young people and parents and supporters of services for homeless kids sleeping out at the Drake Stadium on November the 8th. Last year, in one night, we raised $130,000 to help homeless youth. Reggie was a young man who was aged out of foster care, left at age 18, after being in foster care with his brothers and sisters from age 8, and all he had was over his shoulder a plastic bag with his clothes. He didn't have a high school diploma. He didn't have any identification, including he didn't even have his birth certificate. And that's how kids used to leave the foster care system. And his death led to to his tragic death. He was found in the Des Moines River, no clothes on, with a belt around his neck. That led to Iowa Aftercare Services Network, and that's the expansion of into Eldora that we were talking about. So we're keeping his name alive by hosting Reggie Sleepout, and since we started that, we have raised almost $1 million for homeless youth from the public. So I'm going to hand these out along with our holiday wish list. So thank you again for your support.
While you're handing that out, I'll just say, Paul and Wayne, I'm sure you guys were model citizens at 17 and 18. I am sure glad that I'm not judged by who I was when I was 17 and 18, and I was fortunate to have a support network, unlike many of these kids, that allowed me to grow to adulthood. I think it's a tragedy that we're losing as many young people as we're losing.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Thanks, George.
Okay, gift cards. Oh, okay. Good. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thanks, George.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, we're going to hear from Ron Christensen for the Community Life Program. Mm-hmm. Morning, Ron.
Morning.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You all have my report in front of you, and I don't plan to go through that entire thing. I just thought this morning would give me an opportunity to kind of update you on where things are at over at CLP. We are approximately 8 months from our target date of transitioning CLP to a new provider. As of the end of this month, it will be exactly 8 months. So I remember sitting here and you all saying we have 18 months to figure out how to make it go. And I'm so proud of our staff for making it this far. We are still serving over 200 people. We're losing staff, and that's just a natural consequence of where we're at. They're finding opportunities and moving on, and I certainly don't begrudge anybody that opportunity. Where we're struggling right now is in the financial area. We have no financial department as of right now, which has caused us to have to delay our cost reports for this year. I am so appreciative of Kevin Norris for helping me out. He's been coming over before work in the mornings and giving me a hand. But we just weren't able to get it done in time. So we're hoping by the end of November to have that report in. It's just, and there have been so many people from the county that have stepped up and helped out. Alyssa Wignall's doing our timesheets now. People from the auditor's office are helping us out with payroll. So it's been a testament to the county system that we're hanging in there. So with that, what questions do you all have or concerns about where we're at and what's happening at CLP?
Well, I'd start with sincere appreciation to you and your staff for the way you guys have done over, you said 18 months, and now we're 8 months away, over the last 10 months to a year. And I have firm expectations that will continue with the staff that you have remaining. Hopefully, there is a very strong feeling that this board is committed to doing everything we can with the staff that stays with us throughout. The concern I have is, we have to be able to submit those bills. We have to be able to run the financials. And so I would encourage us, if we've got to go out and hire a consultant to help us get through this, whatever we need to do. I think we've talked about this repeatedly, that there are dollars involved in trying to make sure that we take this thing all the way to the end. And so please don't let the rationale for why you don't have a financial department anymore be that the dollars aren't available. I mean, clearly we can't go out and hire a new full-time person at this stage, but there has to be consultants available. And I'd ask you and Deb to work together and maybe reach out to Parker Dennison, who conducted the report, just to see if they know of anybody who would do something like this, if there is anybody who would be willing to take on a project like this for the next 8 months, just to help us get through. Kevin has been outstanding. He's got a busy week or so ahead of him right here, and so we're appreciative to him. But we need to have some kind of consistent, reliable, professional help for you to file the things. And, Wayne, this is so important to the region as I see it, because if we don't get these cost reports filed, I mean, that's just kicking the can down the road and when those dollars come back into the region. So I'd encourage us to leave no stone unturned and don't let dollars be a hindrance to having somebody doing this.
I appreciate that. Right now, I think most everything is covered. It's just those cost reports. And I think if it was an election week, I think Kevin could finish up in a few hours. It's just a matter of he doesn't have that time right now. So we'll get those done as soon as he's available to help us.
Yeah.
And really bringing someone else in at this stage of the game, they'd have to learn our whole system to figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot quicker to just have Kevin do it. And then I think we can start looking at where do we go from here for next year's cost report. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ron, it's definitely a testament to your dedication and leadership that we're still in the position that we're in. And I know Alyssa and I are coming over this afternoon to meet with some staff to see if we can answer some more questions. And just so you know and your staff knows that we're available anytime. We'll have as many meetings as we need to have between here and in the end of June to make sure we transition through this. So
thank you for that.
Appreciate your help on all this.
And you all, and Ron and Deb, of course, you know, I meet with him every other week for a little update, and he's certainly kept me abreast as to how they're moving forward during this time. And so I do appreciate not only the leadership but the dedication of the staff and so forth and how everyone is pulling together. So hopefully we'll have a conclusion that will continue to provide the essential services to the clients in need in Story County by the end of the fiscal year. So, again, thank you.
Thanks.
And then I think 3 o'clock on Monday, I believe. We've moved our time to 3 o'clock, right? Okay.
That takes us to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Just briefly, I met with Deb yesterday morning, and we just had a brief discussion. We focused just on just a couple topics. We kind of just a little update on the HERTA public transit challenges and some of the ongoing things and the information that was brought to us today in terms of the collaboration between the various entities as we look for solutions to resolve some of these areas. We also talked about the draft that we received on the Medicaid offset, how that now DHS is going to allow a one check to come from the region, and which is the logical, sensible way of doing things since all the funding that came in through the transition funding went directly to the region. It just made sense to have that happen, and I like to credit Deb because I think I told her she must have really smoothed the DHS people when she talked to them to make that happen, because I know not only does it affect us, but it affect all the other regions as well. And I think this was an excellent example. And then we just kind of talked a little bit about preparation for the budget session that's coming up. You know, the governing board will need to begin to take a look at the FY15 budget and beyond, and looking at how we're going to break out the administrative service versus the other components of that. And there'll probably be two different types of budget preparation. And I think the leadership from our ADMIT team is certainly very evident in how that they are giving a lot of clarity to the things that needed to be addressed so that we at the governing board, are in a better position to fully understand just where we are and what decisions that need to be made as we move forward. And I think there's a couple things that's going to come before us at our next meeting, and it will center pretty much around the budgeting process and what the role of the governing board will probably be, and you'll hear more about that after that presentation. And I think she also referenced the fact that her and Christy and Lisa Heddens and so forth have also been meeting and talking about some of the challenges that are happening that maybe Mary Greeley wants to present to the legislators, and we want to make sure that Lisa is well versed on this because she will be in an excellent position to help maybe secure some additional champions if there's to be some legislative changes to address some of the challenges that our primary care providers, or not primary care providers, but some of the clients that Mary Greeley personnel is seeing actually is more in the mental health arena than what they should be able to do. So there needs to be the focus from the legislator, I think, to make that happen. But I would be remiss if I didn't also take this time to, again, just echo the outstanding work that Deb is providing for us in her leadership role, not only in the past, but guiding us through this whole regionalization and restructuring. And I've heard some good things from the people down at ISAC and others, how effective you are in meeting with the leadership at the state level. So I think this is something that we're very fortunate about, and I'm very confident that not only with the leadership that we have from Deb and the leadership that we have from Ron and all of our staff, that we're very fortunate as supervisors to have such quality people providing the leadership for the programs in Story County. So thank you again to all of you for what you do for us.
Well said. Pass.
I'll pass also. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Announcements from the Supervisor Wayne.
Don't have any. Pass.
Pass.
Pass. You know what that means.
Move adjournment.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Mm-hmm.